I just want to partner with people that are far above me in asset classes that are a lot larger. I want to do bigger deals. I'd rather just do a handful of seven-figure deals. That's the direction that I'm going, and hopefully it grows, it scales to bigger projects.
Yeah.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. Hey, I'm excited for this one. I'm here with my friend for several years now, Kyle Doney. He's out of Colorado. Let me just tell you a little bit about his background. He spent time in Colorado, and after the military and college in 2012, he started his entrepreneurial journey, started a healthy vending company and a wireless wholesale company shortly after in 2013. And then he was part-time in the real estate business from 2013 to 2017, which is going to be great to hear about, because a lot of us want to know how we can get into this business full-time if we're not already. And then he sold his other businesses and started to focus on growing his real estate company, which has become his obsession, which really gets him up, gets him fired up, gets to challenge him each and every day. So I'm excited. Kyle, how you doing?
Good, good, Neil. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's good to see you. Thanks for joining me here.
Yep.
Hey, so you were in you had two other businesses. How did you even step a toe into real estate?
Yeah, so I was interested in real estate since college. And I was actually, when I was in college, I was looking at doing what's now referred to as a house hack. And, buying a house and renting a bunch of rooms out. And I just didn't pull the trigger. I didn't do it. And I should have, honestly. I should have, looking back in hindsight, I should have did it. That was 2008. So that's when I was looking and getting interested, but I never really did anything. I was reading on bigger pockets and kind of educating myself, but I did that education whole thing, you know, where you read and don't take action. I did that for several years before actually doing a deal.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an interest and more like educating myself, reading, but never really doing, and started these other businesses that were more obtainable. Real estate wasn't exactly obtainable, I guess, in my eyes, although it is, you know, we know that
looking back,
no money. Right. Looking back, I
could. You're like, oh, that was just a mental thing. That wasn't reality.
That's right. I just didn't have enough information on how to do it. Didn't know anybody doing it. But, you know, about 5 years later, in 2013 is when I bought my first house, and bought two houses that year, actually. And it's all from there.
Yeah. And then so you bought your first houses in 13. What'd you do with them? What kind of investment? What was your entry to that?
Yeah. So the first house was the house hack. So I bought a 4-bedroom, two bath house, just started renting rooms out. So I lived there for 5 years, actually. And over those years, I had multiple buddies that moved from other states to Colorado, and I'd kind of be like the landing pad. They would stay with me for whatever, 6 months or a year, whatever it was, and rent a room out. And I would rent several rooms, and then they would go and whatever, they'd move on, buy their own house or get another house. And so that's kind of how I got into it. And that was before house hacking was called house hacking, but it's, just looked at like, I can rent this room for whatever it was, $500 I think it was at the time, and make a little bit of my mortgage and not pay anything to live. So that was my first one. And that kind of got me understanding how a real estate transaction works. And then my second one was a rental that I bought about an hour north of me in Greeley, Colorado. And so I found this house on Craigslist, actually, and it was super cheap. I had the cash, and just bought it cash and learned a lot of lessons on that house.
Yeah. Do you still have it today or not?
I do.
Yeah.
So it like probably 5x'd in price since I bought it, or more than that. Actually, let me think. I bought it for $25,000. It's probably worth about $250 now. So
10x.
Not bad.
No, not bad at all.
Yeah.
All right. So bring me through 2021, last year. What does your business look like at this point in time?
Yeah. So we're mainly a fix and flip company, but I do a little bit of everything. So my main, I would say probably 80% of my deals are fix and flip. So we do a bunch of marketing, find houses, or we buy from wholesalers or wherever we get them from. Generally, 70% is from our marketing and 30% is from self-generated, which would be like wholesalers, realtors, network, my network basically. So we buy these houses, we come in, we rehab them, and we sell them. And that's my main business in 2021. And what I've been doing for the past probably, I would say 4 years, has been flipping houses mostly. As far as team goes, I run really lean. The job market's crazy right now, so it's super hard to hire. So it's kind of like I hire somebody, they don't work out, and get the next guy. But I've had a couple stable people that I've had for 3-4 years now that are really great. And one of them is my project manager, Mario, and he does an awesome job. He's been with me for, I think, 4 years now, or going on 4 years. So he's been with me a long time, and he helps run all the flips. I have 5 VAs that do a variety of different things. And then I have two sales. I typically have 2 sales guys on hand. I just got rid of one. So I have one left now at this point. But they say if you have one, you have none. So I need to actually make another hire. So I'm actively, I have a recruiter out looking for a new salesperson to hope to bring one more in, and always try to have 2 at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your culture in your organization like?
It's pretty independent, honestly. I mean, we all work from home. I tried the office thing and it just didn't work. So, you know, Denver Metro is a huge population, huge area. Yeah. And so when I hire somebody that lives 45 minutes away and from where I'm at, where my base is, where my office is at, expecting them to drive 45 minutes to work, it wasn't really realistic.
Yeah.
I'm fine with them working at home. And so we're all pretty independent. We all work from home, and it's basically, is shit getting done or is it not? I mean, that's really it. That's what it comes down to. And you can tell if somebody's working and they're not working. And so I would say our culture is independent. I don't require somebody to necessarily clock in at a certain time, but obviously they need to be around during business hours and they need to get done what needs done. We have virtual meetings to stay on track weekly and go over the projects and go over what's going on. But overall, I like to hire people that are self-starters and kind of can run on their own, that they don't need to be sitting in the office next to me to do a good job.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That really speaks to your personality in terms of how you'd want to be managed and how you want to manage others. And then that defines that culture there.
Yep. 100%.
You like to be a little independent too, don't you? I mean, I know you well enough to know that you're not all about work. So you've got time carved off for fun at the same while you're doing this. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of doing all the work, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, I feel that. Like I get, like there's certain times like I'll go on a streak of working where I'm just working 12 hours a day for however many days in a row. And it's like, I started getting burnt out, and it's like, I need to go do something else. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies outside of making money and doing business. And if I don't do those, I don't feel like me. I don't feel good. I mean, there's gotta be a work-life balance. And I think that's kind of to the culture thing. Like, I don't want to have to feel like I need to be in an office from 9 to 5.
Right.
If I want to go for a bike ride in the middle of the day or in the morning or whatever, like, I don't want to have to feel bad about it. I just want to do it and come back and get back to work or whatever. Right.
Right.
So,
all right. What are your favorite outdoor activities there in Colorado? Seems like everybody's active in Colorado.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, so right now it's winter. So before this interview, I was actually a little late because I was snowboarding. So I like to snowboard.
Awesome.
So I have a place in Breckenridge, and I come up here and spend time up here and go back and forth to Denver. So I've been up here for about a week now snowboarding. So that's kind of my winter thing. But in the summer or the other months, the rest of the months, it's two wheels. I'm a two-wheel guy. So I ride motocross, and I ride a lot of mountain bike, and I ride a little BMX bike too. So bicycling is kind of my main hobby, but obviously I'm out there. I live in Golden, and we're at the foothills, so there's mountains right outside my door. So I like to go for hikes and do all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Were you raised in Colorado?
No, I'm actually from Pennsylvania.
You got there through military and through college?
Yeah. So I was in the Air Force for 6 years. Yep. And so I moved all around. My brother went to college in Colorado. And that's how I landed here. I come out and visit, and I was like, this place is awesome.
Yeah.
And eventually when I got out and I got done with college, I moved out as well.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place. Batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batch Leads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month. Yeah. No, cool. What have, obviously, you know, getting to, you know, from part-time all the way to the level you're at and doing some pretty significant numbers, what have been the challenges? You know, maybe what has been, you know, the biggest top three challenges along the way from working through that?
As far as growing from
from nothing to something.
From nothing to something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think to start, it's capital related a lot of times. It's knowledge and capital. Like, I mean, when I went into this, luckily I had capital. I wasn't flat broke going into this because I had other businesses that were making good money.
Right.
And so I kind of got into it as a, almost like a side hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just buying a couple houses a year for a while and cut my teeth that way. But as I started to scale, a lot of it is people and capital. I mean, if you want to scale generally with flipping, you have to have access to money or else you can't do, you know, let's say 20 projects at a time going. It takes a lot of capital to do. So that's a big thing. And I think that, you know, there's two ways to do it. There's organically, and then there's raising money and just kind of right into it. I think it takes time. It took me time to scale up, you know, from a couple deals a year, and every year it would just become more and more and more. And then the other side of that is once you get to that level where you make money on one project and you don't go buy a Lambo or something and you reinvest in the next and the next and the next and you don't blow your money and you manage your money well, you can start scaling the business. And then from there, it's employees, it's people. You need people to run the operation. And for me, that's been mostly contractors, like hiring outside contractors and kind of running my business that way more than a ton of staff. Typically, like right now, I usually have 5 internal employees and then I have about 5 VAs. That's been about what I'm usually have, give or take, depending on turnover.
Yeah.
And that works well for me for the volume that we do. But that's the hardest thing. Like I have a few positions right now I'm hiring and, you know, I don't actually like going through doing all the hunting. It's challenging. It's tough. It takes a lot of interviews and a lot of time. And so I've actually hired a recruiter to help me hire these positions to kind of streamline that a bit.
Yeah. Hunting for an employee is not that, although we all know it's important and it's imperative, and getting the perfect one moves the needle in a giant way. It doesn't quite have the same rush as getting a house at a bargain.
Exactly.
There's no way around it.
That's true. Yeah. And it's tough sometimes, like you get in that hustler mode where it's like, I'll just do it. Right. Like I'll just get the deals. And you can't scale like that. Like you have people, like you just can't be the guy that does everything.
Correct.
It doesn't work.
Hey, take me back to capital. So for somebody who's in a capital constricted position, what advice would you give to them?
I would say wholesale. I mean, I think that's the answer typically, wholesale or partner.
Wholesale to generate income, stack cash, and then move into fix and flip.
Or partner. I mean, if you're good enough at making those relationships and let's say somebody comes to me and they have an awesome deal and they could wholesale it to me or they could partner, I would probably advise if the guy that they're coming to is willing to partner, I would probably advise they try to get a partnership going.
Yeah.
Because if they can find the deal and bring it to somebody, let's say they bring it to me or somebody like you, and you know what you're doing, they're going to learn a ton through that process. Versus just dumping it off and like, okay, I got my 20K fee. Now I got 20K. That's great. You can reinvest that in marketing and help scale. But if you want to get a bit, you know, a bigger knowledge and grow, you need to find some type of mentor. And I think partnering is a good way to do it.
Yeah. If you ever want to level up and go to a different playing field that you're not at now, money just isn't it. There's a knowledge gap that has to be filled there one way or another.
Yep. And to get that knowledge gap, either you got to pay for it or you got to bring value. I mean, there's two ways of doing it.
Yep.
And both, I don't think there's any wrong way. I think people learn differently. Some people learn by getting in a mastermind group or taking a course, and others learn by actually hands-on partnering somebody, going to the house, seeing what they're doing. Like, I think that's probably a better way, is firsthand experience.
Sure.
But yeah, if I was just starting out with no money, that's what I'd be doing, hustling to find the deal and trying to find someone to partner with on it. And if I can't, then I'm wholesaling it and reinvesting that money into finding more.
Tell me, I'm curious, because Colorado is looks different than Iowa. What's the biggest win you've ever had in a transaction?
So, I mean, the markets this year has been nuts. Right. I've had several multiple six-figure deals, which is just nuts. I mean, you know, making one of our deals this year made $200,000 on one deal.
Incredible.
You know? It's crazy. But the prices have ran up so much that, and that wasn't expected. I mean, obviously we got a good deal up front, but appreciation helped us on that. Like, I'm not giving myself a pat on the back and saying that
it all appreciated while you held it.
It appreciated. I mean, it's kind of, it's probably easier now to make money than ever before, as far as if you can actually get yourself in a deal with the way the market's going. I mean, you can make all kinds of mistakes, flip in the house and still come out ahead.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that's this year. I had a couple big wins like that. I had a land deal that was more than that, like $250,000 we made off of that. And I don't know, it was the first time I did like a land entitlement deal.
Yeah.
And, it killed it. So this year I had a couple that have beat the rest of the years.
Yeah. Incredible. All right. What's the worst deal you ever did?
When I got into real estate, I was doing it by myself for a couple of years, just like I mentioned, like buying one or two here and there, buying rentals. And I started getting hungrier. And I, like I mentioned, I had these other businesses that were making money. So I had extra money on the side. And I got too hungry, I guess you would say. And I ended up getting in a bad partnership. There was a guy in town and I ended up partnering with him. And I think we bought five houses in like a month. And I kind of just went in way too much with this guy. Yeah. And I was putting up a lot of the capital. And it turned out he was just a bad egg. You know, he was kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, I guess you would say. He kind of had a little scheme going with his contractor partner. And I didn't know enough at the time about flipping and the right thing and the wrong thing to be doing and how to see that, you know, see that I was getting played.
Yep.
And so I lost a lot of money on that. I lost six figures just on that deal with that guy doing those deals, and had to go through a bunch of legal stuff and sue him. And it was a whole thing. And I learned a ton from that. That was in 2015. I learned a lot from that.
And if you had to boil it down to, you know, top, let's say the number one thing that you learned as a result of that, what was it?
You got to vet out the person you're doing business with. You got to do due diligence on that person. If you don't have a pre-existing relationship and know that person, you have to look into them. Like, you can't just, words are not enough. Like, you have to talk to other people. You have to go out and shake some trees. Like, you got to find out about that person, see what they're doing, go to their job sites.
Understand what people see their financial records, what are their tax returns, right?
Yep. If you don't know them, I mean, I wouldn't say you have to do that with somebody that you know and you know has a track record, but if you don't know the person at all, like, you have to go out and verify. Like, you trust but verify. And I didn't do that. And that's what caused me to lose all that money.
Yeah.
You know, it was a painful lesson in what not to do.
Yeah. You know what? I think it's good advice for those listening, because giving consideration to entering into a partnership, certainly in today's marketplace, given that everything's rosy, but there may be, not me, there will be a time that comes, whenever that time is, where things will turn, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's when you really find out who you're in business with. And it's important to know going in. It's got to get handled. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it just know, I mean, especially if you're putting up money, like, that's, who are you putting up money to and how is that money secured?
Right.
You know? Yeah. You just don't want to go in blind putting up money.
Yeah. Outside of this situation, knowing what you now know, I'm saying about the business in general and the success you have, what would you have done differently from the get-go?
I probably would have stopped doing those other two businesses and went more all in real estate. I mean, it's funny, like, when you're somebody that's listening to this, you could apply this to a job, right? Like, I think I don't think necessarily you should quit your job if you don't have reserves and you don't have the means to do so. Yeah. But I know that I could have transitioned way faster. Like, I could have been, if I was doing deals when I started in 2013, more deals and holding more properties. I was wholesaling some stuff off back then as well. I would just be in a different level of net worth, a different skill set. Like, I would be higher in the game. You know, I just was really slow. I was kind of like tiptoeing in it. And I think that's fine for a little while, but I could have cut the cord on those other businesses that were taking up my time and not making, they were doing well, but like the opportunity of what real estate can provide and what you can make with real estate wasn't there with, let's say, vending machines, which is what I was doing. I mean, scaling that is, it's doable, right? People make big vending machine businesses, but correct, there's a lot of headache around that versus flipping one house and making, let's say, 50 grand or right, whatever you make right on it, right? Like I got to sell a lot of snacks to make 50 grand, you know? So I think I could have cut that off sooner and just went more all in on real estate and would have been a little bit at a different level, but either way, you know, I think there's always steps, right? Like things happen for a reason. And I learned a lot doing that, and going slow and who knows, maybe I would have fell flat on my face if I would have went all in right away and gone broke. I don't know. Maybe going slow was the right way to do it.
Sure. Are you holding rentals today or acquiring rentals? It is.
I am. Yeah. I really made a push this year to buy more rentals.
What percentage, are you wholesaling anything?
Here and there.
Yeah. I mean, all right. So my
four this year, maybe.
All right. Like, so my question is, what percentage of your business is wholesale? What percentage is fix and flip and then buy and hold?
Yeah.
In terms of unit count.
I don't know so I know last year we flipped 48 houses. 48 houses is what we sold. That's what we sold in 21. Yep. I kept 13 properties as rentals, which was 25 units. So I don't know the percentage of that.
Yeah.
They weren't all duplexes. There was some single family in there.
Yep.
I bought an 8-unit, bought some other stuff. So there were some other properties in there. I maybe wholesaled 3 or 4 houses. I don't know the exact number. A few. Like if they're total pieces of crap that are going to be a nightmare headache for me, then I just typically sell them to somebody else. Or if we get an offer that's like, why even flip this? Like the price is so good on what somebody's offering me. Why am I even going to go through the hassle of flipping this?
Right.
And then maybe we wholesale it
all. What has you make a decision to flip a home or keep it as a single family rental?
The numbers, really. I mean, so in Denver, our price points are so high. So like if I come in and buy a $500,000 house, it's probably not going to work as a rental. Right. And so our median price right now is, I believe it's in the 600s, somewhere around there. So our home prices are crazy expensive. So a lot of the stuff I'm finding is more in the outskirts. And sometimes I find good deals in Denver too, around the city, but it's got a cash flow. And so that's generally what I'm looking at. Like after I'm principal, interest, tax, insurance, does the cash flow.
Right.
And sometimes it's just, honestly, it's just a play for tax reasons. Sometimes I buy rentals and I'll just sit on it for a year or 2 years and then sell it in 1031. And it's just a tax play, you know, like it's a long-term flip. Like I'll buy it. Like I just bought one last week. There's a tenant in it. We could flip it and make good money. And I was going to flip it, but then I looked at it and their rent was super low. I said to the tenant, hey, I'm going to raise your, I think it was $600 increase or $700 increase. I said, I'm going to raise your rent up to market rent. If you want to stay, it's your choice. And they were like, yeah, we want to stay. We've been here 8 years. I'm like, okay, well then now I got, this is a rental now, you know? And so,
what was their rent?
It was like $1,100 somewhere around there.
Was $1,100 and then it went to what? 1800.
We're at $1,750. We'll lay that. Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. And they knew they were under market.
Yeah. See, there's a lesson to learn there from the audience. Cause I've experienced the same thing. I experienced it multiple times, but I bought a small portfolio and, rent had to go up. I mean, same type of thing, not the numbers, but percentage wise, 50, 60%. Yeah. Two houses, both of them, my third party property manager gave me tremendous pushbacks. And, I think it's a terrible idea. You know, they're going to leave. And my standpoint is, okay, where are they going to go?
Yeah,
they're not paying market rent. This is below market rent. If they go look around, jump online, go look at anything, they understand they've been getting a bargain for years.
Years.
Both signed up and both stayed in this scenario.
Yeah. It happens all the time.
Right.
And you know, I try to, especially when a single family that I'm keeping,
sure,
if I know I can flip it, you know, that's why I give them the option. Like, here's what you can pay and this makes sense and I'll hold it. I'll sign a new lease with you.
Right.
And if that doesn't work for you, I understand. I'll give you enough time to move out. You know, we'll give them 30, 60 days, whatever the scenario is there.
Yeah.
And you guys can move out and then we'll just flip it more than likely, typically. So yeah, I think some people look at that as kind of like shark investors, right? Like, oh, you're a bad person. You're coming in doing this. And it's like, there are certain situations where that could be true, but in what I'm describing, it's like they have the option, right? Like I'm not booting them out in a week and like go find a new house in a week.
Correct. Yeah.
You know.
What's the opposite side of a shark investor? We're I'm suggesting bringing a property, an asset that you've paid a lot for, right? That you have to, that has to work. Your bank has to have it work to, mm-hmm. to bring market rent or rent to market rates.
Yeah.
And the opposite side of that is they've taken advantage of a situation, an ill-informed or poor manager operator for a period of years, right? And are paying sharply below market rate. So,
I mean, it's, I don't know. It's, I think it's just, it is what it is, right? Like that's,
Well, it's the market you're in. And I agree with you. It's not, folks get plenty of time and they're in charge. They're in the driver's seat at the end of the day. They can make a decision. Right.
Yeah, for sure. And they, in this specific situation, they were like, hey, we have some windows that are cracked and we have this and that. And like, can you take care of for us? I'm like, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The previous person never did.
They didn't do anything. It's like, all right, you're going to pay more rent. But
the tenant never called because the rent was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So now they're like, hey, can you do this and that? It's like, all right, man. Yeah. No problem. I'll do a few things for you.
Right.
It's fine.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. But first, a word from our sponsors. Thinking about adding people to your team now or in the next year? New and experienced investors alike are turning to the definitive book on hiring written by yours truly. It's called Unicorn Hunting for Real Estate Investment Companies. How to easily attract, screen, and land a unicorn. It's the complete hiring funnel. This book is a step-by-step process. It includes the secret sauce for attracting more applicants than you'll ever need, the exact resources to use along with screenshots, so it's easy to follow. How to accurately compensate the role and find candidates who will work for 15 to 30% less than the average wage in your home city. P.S. No, we're not shipping the jobs overseas. How to weed out applicants, including the exact word for word my team uses in our own business. Every single email needed for the entire process, it's all included. The screening tools used when interviewing, when to make the job offer. It's so easy that 90% of the work that goes into unicorn hunting can be done by someone else or a VA. This book retails on Amazon for $49.95. But since you listen here to Real Grit, I want to say thanks. I want to give you a free copy. I just ask that you cover the shipping handling. To get your free copy along with a few valuable bonuses I have not yet even mentioned, go to www.landaunicorn.com. That's www.landaunicorn.com right now to get your free book. All right. So 2022, where are you headed?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I've been primarily single family flipping, small multi as well. We've done different condo conversions and small multifamily flips, but I'm looking to go into bigger deals. This year I started dabbling in bigger deals. And so 2021, I got myself into two different development deals. And so I'm starting to develop now. And that's new, exciting, challenging. Develop
just ground or ground up?
Ground up. So ground up. Yep. Yeah. So we have two different sites right now that we're developing, and for a total of three duplexes, 6 units. And so that's been fun. It's right in my backyard. It's in my neighborhood, actually.
Cool.
And it's really neat. It's something new that I'm learning, and I think the biggest, most successful real estate investors typically are developers. You know, like. The skyscrapers, those are developers.
Yeah. There's no house flippers that own NFL teams, right?
Exactly. They're developers.
Correct.
Yeah. So I'm learning that game. It's a lot different than flipping for sure.
Right.
Just in regards with a lot of it is just dealing with cities, working with cities. And there's a lot of challenges around that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to development. I'm also looking to do more commercial real estate as well. And so last year I bought a car wash. Pretty random. A wholesaler brought it to me, and it's a garage. There's a garage on the lot and a 7-bay car wash. Mm-hmm. And so I bought that. And like I spoke to earlier about partnering, I don't know what I'm doing with commercial. I don't know anything first thing about a car wash, but I have a buddy that I know that I borrowed money from before that has a lot of commercial real estate. And I called him up and I said, hey, I got this car wash deal. What do you think about it? He looked at it. He said, yeah, I'd be interested in it. And we had never done business together besides me borrowing money.
Yeah.
And so I kind of changed that relationship from being the borrower to being the partner with this guy. And I think that opened a lot of doors. And I also learned a lot about commercial real estate.
So, yeah, there's benefit. And I see it. And obviously that's a business that I run as partnering with other folks. There's certainly benefit in partnering with people when, like you said early on, fill that knowledge gap and earn. How do you get paid and learn at the same time? I mean, it's a tremendous position to be in to set yourself up for future success. And at the same time, minimize any downward swing that could possibly happen. Because if you're out on your own without knowing what you're doing.
Yep. Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the same thing with development. I have a 50-50 partner on that as well. Yeah. And same thing. I've never developed anything and he's developed a bunch. And so I'm learning a lot from him being involved and just kind of, I don't want to say watching. There's some doing involved as well, obviously, but a lot of it is just watching what he does and how he handles things. And I'm just learning a ton from that. So that's where I'm going. I mean, I just want to partner with people that are far above me in asset classes that are a lot larger, right? Like I want to do bigger deals. I don't want to do all these flips. I'd rather just do a handful of 7-figure deals. That's the direction that I'm going and trying to make work. And then kind of in the learning phase at the moment, but you know, hopefully it grows and it scales to bigger projects.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Let's move on to our final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
It doesn't matter. And if it did, who cares? Your dad said it. Why is that important to you? Your favorite quote.
Because I think we get worked up just as people, as humans, we get worked up over little things. Oftentimes, like someone cuts you off in traffic, for example, like whatever, who cares? Just keep driving. Like, just keep going where you're going. Like if they didn't kill you, like you're not crashed. Like even if they cause a crash, like, it changes nothing by getting worked up and freaking out and causing more of an issue. Yeah. And so I just love the quote. Cause it makes me like, when I think about it, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like that person cut me off or whatever they did, whatever happened, like in the grand scheme of life, it doesn't matter. And if it did, who cares? You know, like whatever, you know, just keep moving forward and like be positive and don't like these little things in life that we get worked up over. And I do it. I get worked up over stupid little stuff. Right. And it's like,
all of us do as humans. Yeah.
It's just, as humans, that's what we do. But it's just most of the stuff we get worked up over is just not important. Like it's just, we're wasting energy getting worked up over some dumb little thing.
Right.
So that's why I like that quote.
Yeah, that's good. What do you think holds most investors back from taking, you know, from going to the next level, whatever that next level is for them?
Yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself of when I started and got going. I think it's a lot of it's who you surround yourself with, just being around the right people, right? Like I talked about in college, how I was reading and I wanted to buy a rental, but I didn't know anybody that did it. And I didn't immerse myself around people that were doing it. And so it wasn't really obtainable to me. I think if you get around a group of people that are doing it, and it could be your local meetups, whatever, it doesn't necessarily have to be a paid mastermind or paid group, although that helps. Just getting around people that are doing it makes it real. You talk to somebody else that's your age or in a similar situation and they're doing deals, whatever level they're at and they're doing deals, it makes it real. And so I think you got to get around the right people. And the other piece is just taking action. I think way too many people just do not take action. They'll read forever, right? They'll study it and watch videos and whatever, but they won't actually go do what it takes to make it work. You know, like you can watch videos all day on how to get deals, but if you're not actually doing what it takes, picking up the phone, calling people, networking, sending mail, whatever it is that you need to do, putting flyers on doors, whatever. Yeah. Like if you don't do that, you're never going to get a deal.
Yeah. At some point, all that research is let's call it what it is. It's entertainment. If you didn't take action to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's just so much noise out there. I mean, there's so many gurus and, you know, there's so much information out there that you could watch videos all day and like they're entertaining. Right. But like,
correct.
I mean, if you don't take their information and make a plan and execute, like
to do something, right.
Nothing's gonna, I mean, I talk to newbies often, right. They call me and whatever. And it's like, I talk to them once and you never hear from them again, like, because they don't actually do what I advise them they should probably do.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I think that's the biggest chunk of it is actually doing, just do stuff.
Yep. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Two wheels, bikes, motocross, that type of stuff really is fun for me. So I'm competitive. So I like to, have a bunch of buddies and who's fastest, right? Like we're always racing each other. Or who can climb this hill the fastest, or go down at the fastest, right? Yeah. So that's what I'm into. It's a fun hobby that keeps me in shape.
Yeah. What's your favorite way to make an impact in your community?
I would say just talking with newer guys, like newer investors. It really feels good when, like, I have a guy in particular in mind that he His name's Evan. And when Evan started, he didn't do any deals and know anything. And yeah. I started helping him, guiding him, giving him knowledge. Yeah. Now he does a bunch of deals. Yeah. And like, that's fulfilling and rewarding to see when you tell somebody how to do something and they actually do it and they have success with it.
Yeah. Right.
And then, you know, eventually start doing deals together. Like, that's a win-win for everybody. And it's really rewarding. I think that's, it feels good making an impact that way, like helping somebody actually get into this and do it.
Yeah. It's awesome. Totally awesome. For anybody who wants to follow you, track you, see what you're up to, where can they find you online? How can they connect?
Probably Facebook's the best place.
Yeah.
I don't post a ton, but I post a lot of our flips, and I try to do a weekly update on what we got going on of some sort, post pictures of rehabs or before and afters or, you know, whatever I got going on. So probably Facebook is the best place.
Is that the company there?
My personal profile or the company. So they can look up me, Kyle Doney, D-O-N-E-Y, or they can look up my company, LVN Real Estate, and we post there as well.
We'll make sure we get the links in the show notes here.
Cool.
And great conversation. It's fun to hear about your way up and entry into this through ultimately a house hack for the first one, and then and flips and adding, stacking to your already existing portfolio.
Exactly.
It's exciting. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks a ton. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.